Political tensions continue to deepen between the U.S. and Ukraine over how to end the almost three-year war with Russia.
That war is going in the wrong direction. In the meantime, we're successfully negotiating.
Leaders from France and the U.K. will meet with President Donald Trump in Washington next week.
We look forward to speaking to President Trump more about this.
As Trump calls for Ukraine to hold elections, where do things stand and where are they headed?
It's been pretty clear that they don't want to end this conflict on Russia's terms.
Today is Thursday, February 20th, and this is The Issue from VOA. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
A dictator without elections. Zelensky better move fast or he's not going to have a country left. Got to move fast because that war is going in the wrong direction. In the meantime, we're successfully negotiating an end to the war with Russia.
President Donald Trump Wednesday evening warned that Ukraine's president needed to hold elections and quickly negotiate an end to the war with Russia or risk not having a nation to lead.
He was elected. He's the elected leader of Ukraine, and he's done what Winston Churchill did in Britain in the Second World War, suspended elections while at war. And our job is to stand with the Ukrainians, support the Ukrainians.
British Foreign Minister David Lammy on Thursday, speaking to reporters at the G20 summit in South Africa, said he saw no appetite from Russia for peace with Ukraine after listening to his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, talk at a closed-door meeting.
Peace could be achieved by leaving Ukraine tomorrow, just going. And letting people get on with their lives and letting them have their sovereignty.
The U.S. Special Envoy to Ukraine and Russia, retired Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg's visit to Kyiv this week, coincided with the recent feuding. He and Zelensky's previously scheduled joint comments to the media following their meetings were canceled. And in Washington, U.S. National Security Advisor Mike Waltz Thursday addressed the issue to reporters.
President Trump is obviously very frustrated right now with President Zelensky. The fact that that he hasn't come to the table, that he hasn't been willing to take this opportunity that we have offered. I think he eventually will get to that point, and I hope so very quickly.
Also Thursday, Vice President J.D. Vance, speaking at an annual meeting of the 2025 Conservative Political Action Conference, touted Trump's ability to bring the war to an end.
He, of course, is a very good negotiator, a very good businessman. He recognizes that a lot of these issues are tough. It's going to take a smart statesman to figure this stuff out. But we've got that in the White House. And I really believe that we're in the cusp of peace in Europe for the first time in 3 years because we have leadership from the Oval Office and we haven't had it in 4 years in this country.
Amid the European concerns, Trump will be hosting meetings next week with French President Emmanuel Macron and British Prime Minister Keir Starmer. Joining us now for analysis on the growing rift is Jamil Jaffer, founder and president of the National Security Institute.
Given all of the things that we've been seeing in the last 24 to 48 hours, it seems like the relationship between the U.S. and Ukraine is taking a sharp turn. It seems like it's deteriorating, and now there's sort of a war of words between President Trump and Zelensky. What is your initial reaction to where this appears to be going?
Well, look, obviously, we know who the aggressor in this war was. It was Russia, which invaded Ukraine the first time in 2014 and took Crimea. The Obama administration did nothing about it effectively. And then it happened again in 2022. This time, the Biden administration got aggressive and provided Ukraine, after a short delay, started providing Ukraine with some weapons. And as did Europe, unfortunately, while those weapons certainly helped Ukraine, it has not been enough to get Ukraine over the line to push Russia out. And so now the question is, how do we resolve this conflict, right? And President Donald Trump has taken the position essentially that Ukraine is at fault for this conflict, which is clearly not accurate. And he clearly has a personal beef with President Zelensky, whether irrelevant who started it, but it's clear that they're not getting along. And President Trump has now been calling Zelensky out on social media. Zelensky's done the same. This is not likely to be an effective way for Ukraine to get its territory back from Russia that Russia is currently occupying, about 20% of Ukraine. And that's going to be a real challenge because Ukraine has been pretty clear that they don't want to end this conflict on Russia's terms. And Russia, I think, would be happy to take the 20% of Ukraine they've taken, keep that, including Crimea, which they took in 2014.
We've heard from Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth that it will be very unlikely for Ukraine to get back the territory that has been taken from it. The U.S. met with Russian high-level officials. And, of course, this week we've talked a lot about the fact that Ukraine and Europe were on the sidelines for all of this. Can a deal be struck without all of these entities?
Well, look, I think certainly the United States being the single largest backer of the Ukrainian effort against Russia, the U.S. has a lot of ability to you know, change the terms or dictate at some level the terms. Ukraine has to be at the table because at the end of the day, it's territory that's it is its territory that's been invaded. And Russia has to be at the table. Whether the Europeans are or not, they're certainly an important part of this. They should be. But could the U.S. Get a framework deal in place with Russia? I think they probably could. But here's the challenge, right? I think the real fundamental challenge is this question of how much territory of Ukraine's it is going to get back. What's clear to, you know, I think what's clear to the world is Ukraine should get back, including what Russia took from it in 2014 in Crimea. I think what's clear to everybody is that the 2014 taking of Crimea is probably not at play in this negotiation. In fact, as Pete Hegseth said at the Munich Security Conference last week, or in the lead up to it, the likely scenario is that what we're negotiating about is the 2022 borders. To the extent that Ukraine can does get back all that 2020 territory, I think it's probably a deal that Ukraine is likely to do. But we're not in time about that right now, because right now it appears that President Trump is taking the point of view that the right thing to do is pressure Zelensky, not pressure Russia, which was the aggressor in this war.
Certainly, this is a stark change from how the U.S. has thought of this war and, you know, its policies regarding this war. Why do you think he would say that Zelensky started the war in his own country?
Well, look, there was a claim by Russia from the beginning of this conflict that Ukraine was not doing right by its Russian-speaking citizens in that eastern part of Ukraine. And so the claim was that parts of Ukraine had seceded, had asked to become part of Russia. Russia had agreed. And as a result, it was simply defending now its own territory for a part of a country that had seceded. And that was sort of the Russian position. The United States and the majority of the world, including all of Europe, did not accept that and supported Ukraine in defending its rights on its own territory. But look, during this past election, President Trump was very clear that he thought the war should end. That, in fact, he said the war would come to an end before he even took office if he was elected. That obviously not happened. And his position was also very clear that he thought that the war should likely end on terms that were somewhat more favorable to Russia than clearly Europe thought and clearly the Biden administration thought. So everyone knew that going into the election. So in some ways, what's happening now should not come as a surprise. I think there were a lot of folks who had hopes that perhaps President Trump would put pressure on Russia to come to the table as well. But that was never really what we saw during the elections. And, you know, I argued for that in a recent op-ed in The Hill. But look, at the end of the day, you know, President Trump has been elected. He is going to decide on U.S. policy. And if he decides to simply pull support for Ukraine, that's likely to be the end of the war, because it's unlikely that even if Europe did step up, which it's not likely to, but even if it did step up, it probably can't match all the supplies that Ukraine needs to fight and actually win this war. If tomorrow President Trump says U.S. support for Ukraine is done, we're not putting a single more penny in, we're not sending a single more weapon, right? Ukraine is not going to be able to hold on for very long, right? They will be able to fight for a while. They'll try to get supplies from other countries. But it's hard to imagine them holding off for a significant period of time without U.S. HIMARS, without U.S. ATACMS, without support for the F-16 fighters, the M1 Abrams tanks that we've given them. Now, it's possible that Europe could step up in a massive way. Europe has shown no sign of being willing to act. Even if they did, it's hard to see if they could match what the U.S. has put in so far.
President Trump called Zelensky a dictator without elections and that he better move fast or he's not going to have a country, as I mentioned. It sounds like there's a big push for Zelensky by the U.S. to have an election before an end to the war.
Well, look, Ukrainian law prohibits the holding of elections during martial law. Now, of course, President Zelensky at any time could withdraw the declaration of martial law and hold elections. And in fact, elections were scheduled for March 2024. Those have obviously that date has obviously come and gone. So President Zelensky could choose to hold elections tomorrow if he wants to. Why do I think President Trump is actually putting pressure on Zelensky to hold elections? I think the assumption is that the Ukrainian public is tired of this war, that if they were given a chance to vote, they might vote Zelensky out and somebody more amenable to making a deal with Russia, which Vladimir Zelensky clearly is not, might be elected. Now, the U.S. could be wrong about that. The White House could be wrong, and it could be that the Ukrainian people back Zelensky or back somebody even more aggressive who will not accept the Russian taking of any of its territory and demand that, in fact, Crimea come back as well. So we'd have to see, right? Calling for elections during a time of war is a bet on how the election will turn out. And look, other nations, other democratic nations have held elections during wars, so it's not unprecedented. Some have also staved off elections during wars. So, you know, the record is mixed when it comes to elections in wartime. What we do know is that at least while martial law has been declared, the Ukrainian law today, as it stands, does not permit elections. So either the Ukrainian parliament would need to change its law or President Zelensky would need to withdraw the current declaration of martial law, hold elections, and off we go.
And we mentioned territory. What about guaranteed security for Ukraine? That, I think, is the major concern for President Zelensky moving forward. A guarantee that, you know, this won't just be a pause. And European countries' concern is that if Russia gets whatever it asks for after invading another sovereign country, that they will basically have permission to do that elsewhere. And I think that it would appear that is the big concern for European countries.
Well, look, we've seen the show of Russia invading countries around it time and time again. And we've seen it as recently as 2014 and then again in 2022 when they went into Crimea, took Crimea from Ukraine, and now have taken Donetsk and Luhansk and are seeking to keep even more territory this time around. So there is a precedent for Europe and Ukraine itself, but all of Europe, to be concerned about Russian aggression in that region. So that's number one. Number two, look, what we've seen from Vladimir Putin time and time again, we saw this President Bush who famously saw into his heart, from President Obama who said to him in a time when he thought the microphone was off, hey, just give me a little room after selection, then we can work together. Everyone who's tried to rely on Vladimir Putin's good graces or that he's a good guy or that he'll come around and Russia won't be aggressive has all been proven wrong. So President Trump should learn a lesson from that and recognize that if he gives in or requires Ukraine, in this case, to give in to Vladimir Putin, he's not likely to do anything but simply use that as a time to rebuild his forces and go after more of Ukraine, potentially go after Poland. And if he does any of those things, and the United States remains in NATO, which it is today, although President Trump has suggested at times we might get out, that will require the U.S. to go in and fight on behalf of those countries because of Article 5 of the NATO treaty. So, look, I think it's a big mistake to assume that if you just give in to Putin here, everything will be fine, because that has not been the history of how Vladimir Putin and how Russia operates.
Zelensky has suggested giving U.S. companies the right to extract valuable minerals in Ukraine in return for U.S. security guarantees, rejecting a U.S. proposal last week that would have seen Washington receiving 50% of Ukraine's critical minerals, including lithium, which is a key component in electric car batteries. He basically said to reporters, I can't sell our country. Do you think this is a very big part of what's happening here?
Well, look, I mean, Ukraine can and should expect security guarantees from its friends and partners. The problem, of course, is those security guarantees have done it little in the past. Ukraine gave up its nuclear weapons, or at least the Russian nuclear weapons that were on its territory when the Soviet Union collapsed, in part because both Russia and the United States agreed to guarantee its territorial sovereignty and its territorial integrity. And of course, that was violated in 2014. Nobody did anything about it when Russia invaded Ukraine the first time, and it failed again in 2022. So I'm sure that President Zelensky rightfully is looking for stronger security guarantees and is willing to make a deal, whether it's on critical minerals or something else, to have that happen. That being said, if I were the Ukrainians, I'd be very skeptical of anybody's security guarantees, particularly the United States, because we didn't back them the first time. We've backed them in a very limited way, in a way that hasn't allowed them to win the second time. And so, you know, it's a bad message to Ukrainians. It's a bad message to our other friends and partners in the region. You know, and Europe needs to step up and do its part, too. It shouldn't just be the United States providing security guarantees. Europe's got to do it. And that means Europe's got to come together and really demonstrate that they can fight and win together, something that they have shown a challenge in doing as well.
Monday marks 3 years since the Russia invasion, the three-year anniversary. There is a draft UN General Assembly resolution condemning Russia's aggression and backing Ukraine's territorial integrity. We are hearing that the U.S. will not co-sponsor this U.N. motion backing Ukraine. Would you say that pretty much sums up the shift in policy for where the U.S. is right now?
I mean, I think it's a pretty clear shift in U.S. policy, but it was one that we knew was likely to come. And given President Trump's position both prior to and during the election cycle. And so I don't think it's a surprising turn. I think nobody should be surprised at this change in U.S. policy. It's obviously, it's different than historical U.S. policy, not just in the Biden administration, but for decades going forward. Let's be candid. In the Obama administration, even our policy was Ukraine's territorial integrity should be respected and that we'll stand by it and we'll defend it and we'll co-sponsor U.N. resolutions about it. We didn't actually do anything about it. And let's be honest about the Biden administration. They did a lot about it, spent a lot of money, but never did enough, never gave Ukraine enough to actually win this war. And so nobody should be surprised that we're here now, 3 years in, and people are getting tired of this war, right? At the end of the day, if you want to win a war, you've got to be willing to put the supplies and sometimes the personnel in to win that war. The United States and our European allies have never really been willing to do that. And so as a result, we've seen a lot of dead Ukrainians, unfortunately, fighting for their own country. And now this war is likely to end on terms that are not favorable to them. They're going to lose more of their territory. And all that's going to do is embolden Vladimir Putin, which is a bad outcome for everybody.
Jamil Jaffer, president and founder of the National Security Institute, thank you so much for talking to us. You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America. On behalf of Scott Walterman and all of us here at VOA, thanks so much for joining us. For more news throughout the week, 24 hours a day, check out our website at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Lori London.